right, everybody, welcome back to another episode of the Bowhunter Chronicles podcast brought to you by Huntworth. Huntworth bringing you quality hunting clothing and packs at a price you deserve. Check them out at huntworthgear.com. This podcast was a super fun one. A couple weeks back, we were up at Osawa River Outfitters for the Deer Hunter Collective, the guys from the Deer Hunter podcast, the guys from Michigan Gone Wild, the guys from the Fair Chase. And you can check out the first half, the first third of this podcast over on the Fair Chase. They put it out last week. And so this is the follow-on to that. And it's John, Frank, myself, Kevin from the Deer Hunter podcast, and the fellows from the Fair Chase going over some of the early turkey hunting stuff. We talk about the new deer regulations in Michigan, and then tack prep. So there's a bunch of guys who've never been up there, had questions. We talk about third access, getting your bow set up, all that stuff. But with that many personalities all in the same place and some questions from the crowd interaction, super fun. So the audio on this one came from Kevin, all sent over as one single track. So we just edited it down and plugged it in here. But it is really cool. When something like this pops up again, as it surely will, definitely try and make it a point to be there. So happy we could be a part of this, and you know, getting to meet, you know, some of the Patreons, some of the other listeners, people that we interact with online. It's always good to do that stuff in person. And so for anybody going up to the Total Archery Challenge, we're getting that stuff. I just got a new string, built my arrows from the guys over at Zinger and Kanati, getting ready to build that setup and try to build the tape to shoot for the truck like we do every year. But that's just a great opportunity to, you know, have a beer, have a soda, have a meal with some of the guys that you talk to online, some of the people that you listen to on the podcast. Anytime that one of these events shows up, there's the Mobile Hunters Roadshow coming up in Kalamazoo, that type of stuff. There's the one in Tennessee as well. Try to make it out to those and see some of these people and see that all this stuff, all this interacting that we do online. You know, we see a lot of the negative stuff, but seeing these people in person, it's very easy to have difficult conversations when you're in front of somebody and you can see body language and tense, you know, everything that surrounds it. Just really is beneficial to do that. And then, you know, a lot of these, you know, there's partners, you know, Kevin and the guys up at Jordan and the guys up at the Osawa River Outfitters were just amazing. If you're up in that area, definitely check them out. But, you know, with the guys that sponsor this podcast, like, you know, Latitude, the Huntworth guys, the Jared from Vitalized Seed, the Zinger guys for sure. You know, a lot of these guys are at those types of events, so you can go and ask questions about the products and all that. And then we actually picked up another sponsor here. Austin from Genesis 3D Printing reached out to us and said, hey, we're trying to grow. We're trying to get more awareness, trying to get the word out about some of the products that we've got coming up. And we love what you're doing with the Patreon and that sort of stuff. Would you guys be interested in, you know, helping us out with that? And, you know, of course, Austin is local to us. He puts on an event. I believe that's going to be the last weekend in August this year. But again, a lot of these people and a lot of these, you know, guys that we have on the podcast, you know, they go to these events too. So you can just, it's just a good experience to go and, you know, meet people, network, and talk hunting and you know, kind of detach from the world out there and all the negativity even that we see within the hunting community online. Like when you get together in an environment like that, it's just a great thing. So definitely if you get a chance to go to one of these events, certainly do it. The third iteration of this podcast, the follow-on with the Michigan Gone Wild guys, is going to be dropping probably this Friday, if not this Friday, next Friday, at the Deer Hunter podcast. So that'll be the third episode in the final episode in this series. But it was a ton of fun. Thank you so much for the invite. I know you guys are going to be interested in this. It's fun listening to Uncle Frank and the old school turkey hunting stories, and then, you know, his recount from any of the Total Archery challenges and how he views it as a 70-year-old man. You know, if he can do it, you guys can certainly do it too. But it, along with that, if you're interested in any of the stuff about becoming a Patreon or any of that stuff and like what that entails, you know, we've got giveaways from all of those companies that we mentioned. Big Shot, after they were just on the podcast, came out with a discount code BCP for 10% off on any of their targets. And Spartan Forge, our code Bowhunter is basically the cheapest you're going to find it, 25% off. You just got to go to spartanforge.ai. And that does help us out too. So if you guys are on the fence about that, you can go check them out at spartanforge.ai and use that code. But we just gave away, you know, sticks from Latitude, a set from Huntworth, Kanadi arrows, all that stuff. And it's like 17 cents a day, 33 cents a day, something, depending on, you know, how much support you want to give us. But we appreciate it, and we make sure we give back as much as we can. But if not, if the money that you would give to us for the show is going to take away from you going to one of these events, go to the event. Come see us at the event. Come up to TAC. Come to the barbecue. Definitely do that, because we'd love to hang out and meet you guys in person. But you guys are going to love this episode. Thanks so much for listening. Enjoy.
.245. Yep. We're back. Up and running. That was a kind of confirmation that the beer's being picked up.
All right. It's a good sign.
So they'll just, they'll ask that. So what we're going to do is when we go to watch these guys film, I'll have a cooler full of beer. We can all get into some beers. They'll just ask that you don't take any beer inside the store until 6 o'clock the store closes. Then you guys can go and free. But it's kind of like the rule. Mm-hmm. Yeah, right. Everybody get
make sure to drive. It loosens you up a little bit, you know. Steadies the nerves.
Settles the limbs.
That's yeah. Right.
We'll set up the course for that e-bike.
That's right. Yeah.
Who can shotgun the most beers and draw this bow with no arrow in it, right?
while riding an e-bike.
Yeah.
Oh, that sounds great. Real quick, we're just going to... Jordan gave these to me. There's 20 here, $20 gift cards. Just as a thank you for you. And what we'll do is we'll just raffle them off. There's 20 of them here. We'll go through them real quick. Shit, I don't know. You want to draw and hand to me, and I'll read it off. And you guys, if everybody's got their tickets.
I'm going to throw that one back in.
No.
I got a 492048.
492048. There it is.
Bingo.
$20.
Here you go. Fight over it.
Yeah. Like at the Badlands Film Festival.
Yeah, they just chucking stuff.
Yeah.
Throwing is that how they do it?
Through a cell cam.
You just got to catch it, man, and you're fine.
492052.
Bingo. Oh, he was red. He had that memorized. He didn't even look at his...
he jumped up fast.
Let me verify
he
that.
He could have just... On. Yeah, I was going to say he jumped up real fast. Yeah, it checks out.
These are all zeros.
Yeah. He wrote it on with a pen.
492051. Hot dog.
Wow, that's a hot row right
$20
there.
Bucks mm-hmm. richer. Thank you, sir. Don't say we didn't ever give you nothing.
Yeah.
Actually, we didn't. Osabo River Outfitters.
We handed it to you, though.
Yeah, we did. That was tough.
You mean sure. Vanna White for us?
I don't think Vanna White's hands anything out. I think she just points. Yeah.
We got a 492040.
Oh.
No.
That's gas money to Wisconsin.
Jeez.
He's a good customer.
I got a 492071.
Oh, that is a hot row.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. That seems weird. Maybe dig around there a little bit.
We got 492049.
Oh,
right up in front.
Nice. More hand warmers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. More hand warmers. You could buy a lot with $20.
Be hand warmer rich.
Yeah.
We got 492047.
No,
Rick, stop the steal.
I'll stop this. That's great. Jeez.
Get it together, Kevin.
Told sorry, you were going to be on FBI
I'm
list.
I'm sorry. It's funny, though.
You hope. Exactly. 49. It's not funny, actually.
Yeah, it's unfortunate.
492058. Yeah, it's not been funny.
There I have eight. There he is.
Ha, ha, ha. I got 492043.
Bingo.
Should I, when I publish the podcast, should I include the? Or this is, seems
people
like
want to hear this, man. Especially when you can't see it.
That's what I was thinking. I got 492078.
Oh
yes. Oh, not you. That doesn't count.
Must be present.
No,
he's not here. Well, looks
you know
like
what?
You got
sucks
it.
To suck. We're on the honor system here.
Timing was poor. Mm-hmm.
Yours now.
We kind of know it's going to be yours anyways, yeah. Right? We've been through this. 492050.
Mm. Oh, all right.
Four nine two zero seven zero.
It's my lucky number.
I'm enjoying doing this more than I thought I was going to.
It's like Santa Claus, kind of.
492059.
Oh.
Same row.
Same row. Same group. The trick is you crumple it a little bit, so when people reach in there, they feel that little extra texture. That's how you get drawn.
That makes sense.
Yep. I've won so many fucking guns that way.
Really? Yeah, I'm serious.
He was putting the tickets in.
Hey. Yeah, it's your problem. You'll never win. Yeah.
492041.
All right. Here we go.
Little diversity in the room
there
now.
There you go,
that
yeah.
Back rows.
Went to the back.
Yeah.
They need some more better representation.
492054. How many you got left there, Jordan?
Five.
I think you throw them. Kind yeah. Of a fight situation. Strong, survival of the fittest type of deal.
492053.
I call Frank as the referee, though.
Yeah. I think anything goes if he's the referee, yeah. Actually.
Bathrobe, snow robe.
That's right, as long as underwear, yeah.
492076.
There we go. What are you going to spend it on back there? You won.
Beef jerky.
Beef jerky.
Okay.
Okay, we got 492039.
Final.
492066.
Wow. And the last, that's the last draw, right?
Last draw, yeah.
Nice.
So, who here drove the furthest? Or the furthest?
Wisconsin. It's pretty obvious.
Who drove over 3 hours?
No, I'm just kidding.
Well, actually, I rode.
Didn't you guys say you came from St. Clair Shores?
Yeah, it was like 3 hours.
Yeah, it was 2:48, I think.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
Oh, he's probably got you beat. He's from Tecumseh.
What?
He's further south than you, I'd say, right?
Hey, get on the Google Maps if you need, really. All right, he gets
bingo.
It.
Hey.
All right.
Thank you for making the drive. Appreciate it, especially in the snow.
We'll get you an honorable mention for second place.
Yeah. Do you have something else, Jordan?
Yeah.
Hey, Kevin, Jordan's.
I just wanted to thank Kevin for choosing to kind of put this event together and coming here because it's cool to see everyone come to craft store. I hope you all enjoy it. Hope you get to spend some time in there. We are open to suggestions. This is kind of my first GoPro and buying outdoor. Worked in the outdoor industry for a lot of years, but you know, making sure customers and people are happy and successful in the field is my ultimate goal. So if there's any suggestions, you're like, oh, totally do this, like, come see me or whatever, write a note or whatever it may be. So I really appreciate everyone driving here.
Yeah, for everybody knows, this is Jordan Susiewicz. He's helps operate the store, and he's also a professional by all definition, producer, camera man. Helped me with a film. You see him taking some photos here today, and thank you.
Yeah, thank you guys. Hope you all are enjoying it.
And I don't know why Russell, why do you got? What's the suit?
You look good.
What's with the suit?
Not running for mayor, not running for selling insurance.
You look like it. Interesting. You did tell me you bought a new suit. Last time we hung out, he told us he bought us the new
suit.
That's
a good looking suit. Yeah.
Just a regular Saturday, I got a suit. What the hell? Not a bad move, honestly.
He's not.
What are you doing today? I'm going to put on my new suit and walk down to the...
You just got
to
go where a high-vis situation so you can really get maximum.
First impressions can be deceptive.
Yeah.
Buy a suit.
Okay, so we're going to get this thing right back on the rails. Maybe we'll see. I don't know. The rails might take an interesting pattern here this afternoon. But we said when we were hanging up on the last section and getting into this that we were going to go into specifically what the new management system, the check-in. Is that where you – you just recently had Chad Stewart on, which I thought was a great – conversation. I think I quote Alvin that he's probably got Chad Stewart's probably got it sounds like a great job at face value, but it's got to be just the absolute nightmare, right? I don't know if anybody caught him on Michigan Outdoors recently, but Jimmy kind of grilled him and it was pretty funny. I got a good laugh out of that, but you had him on. Maybe that's a good place to start. I'll let you kind of guide it how you want, but this is the first year that we've had mandatory check-in, which we feel like the state's probably going to get, not probably, right? They're going to get much better data than what they have in the past, and that's they're going to base all their decisions off of that.
Yeah, I mean, so he was very, I don't know, like the politically correct answers when I was asking him, like, hey, you know, what are you going to do with this information? How do you think it compares to, like, your... estimates from your surveys and all that stuff. And he's like, well, you know, obviously surveys are down, but we think our information is great. Well, you get him off the podcast and he's like, yeah, well, I have obviously some different sort of thoughts on that, but like, yeah, I have to be on the record.
He did say off the record. He said literally on the record. Off the record, I'll tell you something. And I was like, yeah, you don't really say that on the record.
That really spells out where your head's at. Yeah.
But Chad's a really great guy. He's an honest guy from my workings with him, that from the best that I can tell. So yeah, he had some pretty valuable information. And
yeah, I mean, we've been talking about it like since we first started hunting Ohio, where that was our first real experience of like having to check in a deer and like having real time. And I think that was 5 or 6 years ago, and we were like, why doesn't Michigan have that? And like, you can go back and listen to one of our podcasts. I told Chad right on the podcast, I'm like, you will hear every bad thing that we think about Michigan. And I'm sure you hear it like every day. Kind of like your point that that's a terrible job to have. Seems like it's great. But I mean, so Frank was kind of putting it to you guys. Like, what did you think of the new registration system, and like, how do you think it's going to affect it? You know, I think from social media and like the people who listen to our podcast and the talks that we've had, the thing that people were most worried about was that damn pin, like dropping the pin. Like, I don't want people to see where my spot is. Is this going to be public record? You know, how can they look at this? And it's like, you know, if you ever went and checked in one of the CWD zones or something, like they have a plot book where you're supposed to put like a pencil mark on there that says this is where it's at. So like, what was your guys's
I don't know if it's unpopular or not, but it felt like it seems like I'm fine with it. It doesn't bother me. Like, I'll probably put a pin down. I'm not really worried about the state. What is the worry? Like, they're going to sell or get rid of like, what are they going to do with the data that is bad for me? That's what I don't understand.
Well, so, like, apps like, you know, Hunt, I don't know, you guys are Huntwise, yeah. right? Or, like, Spartan Forge or whatever. Like, yeah. any public record, like, that's where they pull their information for all this data. So, if that ends up being, like, quote-unquote public record, now you could actually requisition that, mm-hmm. and now you could say, okay, here's where...
Is that like a FOIA? Can you do a FOIA request on PINs? That'd be Freedom of Information Act.
He actually specifically.
It's really? Okay. That's what it is. Okay. That makes sense.
He actually, Chad specifically brought that up, that data was unable to be accessed through that.
They can shield it from a FOIA request?
Because there's some sort of thing where he says.
That thing specifically.
You can say like county, but whatever degree that information is, it is. Exempt from
top,
that.
Top secret.
Interesting.
Only Chad has it.
Yeah. Double O agents and stuff. Yeah.
But that seems to be like what everybody was concerned about. And yeah. these apps, I mean, think about like,
I get it. Yeah.
If you could have Andy May's pins, right? Or if you could have like.
If he could have my pins.
Yeah, you can have mine.
If he wanted mine, which he probably does, I wouldn't give it to him. No, I get it. I do. I don't know. You want best information to have best laws. Like we do complain a lot about different laws that are put into place that don't reflect what we see. This seems like it'd be helpful for on-the-ground information, but yeah, putting a pin on the map, I can see why that is a hard thing to do.
I don't know. Like, I guess I missed why it became such a topic because it's not mandatory, and I wouldn't do that. I just don't want to release that information. I mean, I'm super secretive about how and where I'm going.
The pin is not mandatory, if I understand.
It's completely unmandatory.
You have to just say county.
Yeah. You could put it on the DNR building in Lansing. That's what I did.
There's great bucks around. Yeah,
they're like, wow, who shot three deer in the office?
Yeah, it's a good spot. Yeah,
but I guess if you're worried where people are watching where you go,
do it. Load them up. Yeah,
yeah, they're gonna get a lot. Yeah,
if you're worried about where people know that you are,
like, lead by example.
That's right.
You're already doing that with your smartphone. Every time you have your location service on,
they do.
Google
know
knows
where
exactly
are.
Where you are. So your information's already getting out there.
That's a good point.
You know, I know it's a caveat. Like, we're going down a rabbit hole that way, but.
But we're thinking we're not giving it to them specifically for where we're targeting big bucks.
Yeah.
And that scares
they're
going to
know between the hours of, like, 6 and 12.
But that's the thing. You just
do.
On weekends.
You don't need to do it. So, and I understand at first when that came out, because I was talking with a neighbor, and he said, yeah, you got to put a drop a pin to where you shot your deer. And I said, that's not real. And he said, no, yeah, it's real. And then I found out it was real, and I'm like, that's ridiculous. I don't want to participate in that. And they're like, you don't have to. And I was like, good, I won't.
Yeah. So you just say county, and then you can choose
county.
Whether
that's
or not.
That's all you have to do.
Oh, then I ain't got no problem with that.
Nope.
No.
So what do you think about the actual, like, getting of the information? Like, do you think that we're going in a step in the right direction?
For having
or,
it
like,
through the
wrong?
Phone?
Yeah.
Man, it's weird that there's a lot of states that require it. Like, yeah. you know, and it seems like the most pain-free way to do it. Sometimes just calling in is easier too. We've done that way. Mm-hmm. I don't know. What do you think?
Well, I'm all for better reporting, right? Because there is everybody in here has their own opinion on how Michigan is managing the deer herd, right? And we all have our ideas based on some survey. So, you know, you've received a survey, you haven't received a survey, you've whether you've received it or not, did you send it back? Mm-hmm. Was it truthful? All of that sort of information. Yeah. And I think that that's probably the consensus, and that's what they're seeing. So I would rather that they had correct information to make decisions. And so on that podcast, that was like, I'm like, who's making these decisions? Like, you obviously have information that you want to, or your own opinion you want to tell me off the record.
Yeah.
Right? So who's actually making the decisions? Well, it's the NRC. And so then that went into, you know, are there lobbyists? Who's, you know, who's behind all of it? And he was pretty transparent in saying that, you know, there are lobbyists. Does he see any sort of issue? He's like, I haven't seen anybody like handing out money or these guys like really putting in anything, you know, that wouldn't be like above board. But at the same time, like the guys that are on the ground hunting like us that are, you know, spending our hard-earned money to go to other states where we think there's better buck-to-doe ratio or it's being managed better based on actual reporting.
Exactly.
And if money is the issue, no one is coming to Michigan saying, man, this is a great big buck state, no matter how much Kevin Vissison thinks that two buck opportunities is great.
Yeah, that's right.
Right?
Classic Kevin, man. Yeah.
So, I mean, for me, I would rather that, you know, I would say that we have to do our part in reporting our harvest so that we can know actually how many deer are being harvested.
Yeah.
In what areas, because, I mean, it seems like there's deer everywhere, but not the deer that we want. So right. how do you do that? That's what the biologist's jobs are. But if we're not giving them the correct information, then
you're
it's just
operating
we're
on
just
a lot of
guessing,
assumptions, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So you're the one that brought it up. What do you think?
Well, since we've hunted Ohio and stuff, I agree. You know, I like it. You know, I like to be able to, and you report the deer you kill, you know what I mean? And they have an absolute record, you know, to the township down there, you know, where you shot it, how you shot it, when you shot it. So, and we asked the questions to a couple guys here in Michigan before, you know, and he said, well, we get our information from surveys and the processors. And how many of you guys process your own deer? Okay, that's exactly my point.
How many people had a survey?
You know, so nobody's taking the deer to the processor.
No.
So that's bullshit, you know.
Right. So I just asked him, how many people have had a survey? I've been hunting 37 years. I've had zero. One. And how many years you hunted?
I don't know. Not very. Less than 10 years, I'd say.
But still, one in 10. Yeah. You know, what kind of information is that really giving them?
That's, right. You know. It didn't seem like it was very good info as far as I was concerned, you know. So that's why, you know.
Yeah. The more you participate in that, the more they send you also. Because I get surveys for beaver because I trap.
Right.
Beaver. Oh, that makes sense. You get into the algorithm. Yeah. This guy doesn't use it as a fire starter.
Well, I have got, like, fall turkeys and stuff like that. Like I do get those because it's more specific, you know, especially like for trapping and beavers, you know. But like the deer survey, how many licenses are, you know, sent out? You know, how many licenses are bought in the state of Michigan? You know.
Well, that was my question. Are they going to be able to, how many licenses are sold versus how many deer are actually killed? I'm curious to see that number.
Right.
Have you ever been overwhelmed by the hundreds of food plot seed mixes out there? Well, you are not alone. And Vitalize Seed has developed a seed program that takes the guesswork out of food plotting. Vitalize Seed has two core mixes, the Nitro Boost and Carbon Load, to keep it simple. Nitro Boost is their spring-summer food plot mix, and Carbon Load is the fall plot mix, each having a diverse mix of over a dozen different seed types that are highly attractive to whitetail. Food plotting made simple, but it gets even better. Each mix provides necessary nutrients to the soil, making for better plots each season and saving you money by needing less Roundup and less fertilizer each season. The 1-2 system simplifies your food plots just how nature intended. Vitalize Seed, make biology work for you. Order now at vitalizeseed.com.
Right, so that it's going to be better data.
Yeah. Right. Hopefully that data, I wonder what it recently, I saw it on a page somewhere, I can't remember what it was now, but the information on this past year's deer season was out. I did read it. I can't remember what.
Well, a lot of it was in real time,
yeah,
you know.
Black,
yeah, you can follow antlerless, antlered deer. Yeah, it was real interesting to pay attention to. You know, I just think, I don't know how you can make really good decisions if you don't have the best information.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
So that's like, to me, it just seems like, man, they were way behind the time. Like, they don't know what the hell they're doing.
Right.
Now, at least now we can criticize them and say, well, we can even see the numbers and know you guys suck at your job.
It's
harder
to hide now.
Yeah. Yeah.
It does count more accountability, more transparency, ideally. Right.
Till they get in there and
till they mess around with something, man. Yeah, you never know.
Yeah. But overall, I don't see how you're going to manage a quality deer herd without having, you know, knowing the actual data, right? So hopefully this is a tool that they don't abuse, that they use wisely. And then we'll see here in the next couple of years, really. I mean, everybody's got to pay attention big time the next couple of years, you know. Because they could do us a whole lot of favors with this information, or they could do what they do and do a bunch of stupid shit. I don't know. So, but these next couple years will definitely be worth paying close attention to, because they won't have any more excuses, really, in my opinion. As far as the state goes, they should have way better information than they have historically.
Yeah. So if we want to get on track here.
Was there anything, because I feel like this is important, is there anything anybody wants to add before we move off of this? I think. Oh, yeah. I like that.
Oh, yeah.
Liars.
I actually put the pin. I thought you had to.
I did too.
I didn't.
You don't have to. You could just totally skip right by that.
Yeah.
Let's follow. If you read the instructions.
Put my son showed a buck, and when I went to go put the pin on there, I was like, man, I'm not doing this shit. So I tried to not do it, and they wouldn't let me not do it.
Were you doing it through the app or through the website?
Mine's through the app.
Did it through the app?
Yeah, I deleted that shit
immediately. No, I'll fix it.
Both times I did it through my phone, but I think I just did it through their web browser, and I did not have to do that. And I did seriously shoot two doe, and they look like they got shot in downtown Lansing.
Yeah, Lake Bucks, man.
Highway bucks.
Yeah, highway bucks.
Okay.
Interesting.
Good to know. Okay, great. Awesome. Good input. Thoroughly handled that one.
Nailed it.
Like true professionals.
Yep.
So for the questions that we had from our side here is the like Kevin had said, with tack and some turkey hunting. And so these turkey hunting questions, like as we just have very clearly outlined, we're not biologists.
How many people would turkey hunt? Pretty much majority.
It's great.
So the first couple of questions on here are like, are the numbers up or down, or does Michigan manage well for turkeys? And I think, for John and Frank, I think you guys should talk about like when you first started turkey hunting and like what the population was at that time to where it is now.
Well, so obviously Frank started turkey hunting before me. I started turkey hunting, I think at 12. When I turned 12, I could start turkey hunting. And I remember back then it was, we'd put in for a tag, and if we got it, then we'd have to drive all the way up to like Baldwin area from where, like there was no turkeys around.
So they were just secluded pockets.
Oh yeah, yeah, yep. And it was all northern.
Yeah, like I remember them being up there before. Yep. I remember them being down state.
But yeah, so then it got to the point where, like, they're in my backyard in the feeder. Like, you know, I mean, it was
super fast,
real recent.
Yeah, it came.
We're talking in the last 20 years, right?
Yeah, yep.
So has anybody hunted out of state for turkeys? What states? And how many turkeys can you shoot in each of those states?
One.
Okay. Because I know there's some that are like out east where you can shoot multiple birds. I think Tennessee, you can shoot a bunch of birds. Florida, you can shoot a bunch of birds. And it's hard for us like to look like where we live. There's a right across from Frank's house, there's a flock of like 100 turkeys. Like, like every day they're there, they roost, you can see them. Everywhere we go, there's turkeys. Like, you can't not see turkeys over, like, on our side of the state. So it's hard to say that, like, we manage for turkeys well. And you have leftover tags, right, that go unfilled. And it's like, why can't you do the same thing with deer and buy a leftover tag? But that's another one of those things where talking with, like, Chad and people from the NRC, like, you have to put in a requisition to, you know, get that put into law. And I don't think turkey has the same like pull around here as it does in the South.
Yep.
Like, I don't think anybody cares really that much about turkeys.
You don't see a lot of turkey hunters like you do deer hunters around here. Like, it's not a busy woods at that time of year.
It is for us. Like,
is it?
Man,
I don't ever see people.
It's increased a lot, I think, just even in the past couple years, it's increased quite a bit.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So I think a lot of that's driven, honestly, by social media.
Thanks people, a lot, guys. Yeah, for
people that. Being out there and doing it. Yeah, smash that subscribe button.
That's right. What would Matt Ranella have to say about that?
Yeah, he'd be upset. Frankly, he might have rights to be.
Yeah,
because we're
he
now
could be onto something.
Yeah, I mean, I've heard from multiple people that.
That was a question.
They've seen
an
increase in pressure in turkey hunting.
But we didn't get to it. That is a question at some point for you.
What did Matt Ranella think?
Did he change the way you think? So at some point when you're going, don't.
Sure.
But like in the early days, what were the turkey hunting numbers, at least for hunters, and then to what you're seeing today, Frank?
Well, they only allowed so many permits, you know, and I can't remember what the numbers were, but it was small. And then, like I say, we'd drive, on the way up here, we were talking, we'd drive 350 miles a day. To hunt, you know, our that was our day. And if you got a bird to gobble or saw some turkeys, you know, or found some tracks, you were doing good, you know. And now it's just like, you know, I have to stop, you know, let them cross the road, you know, blow the horn, they gobble, hey, how's it going, Frank? You know, it's like, you know, every day it's like that, you know. Yeah.
When we first started, there was a cutoff too. We couldn't hunt.
Yeah,
after
you could only hunt till noon or 1 o'clock. Yeah.
I remember that, and it's still that way in some states,
it
right?
It is.
You couldn't. Yeah. So then we'd go put them to bed, you know, like roosting. Right. Like
that's kind of fun to do. Yeah.
So that's one of the questions that's on here is like, how do you go about locating turkeys? Like when I mean, obviously we've said okay, there's turkeys everywhere. They're so easy to find, but a lot of these are like. Yard birds or birds that are just around your house. So like when you're going out on public land, like I mean we still do it today, like sometimes we take the low hanging fruit and shoot the really easy ones, but like when we're
shoot
when
you're, at them
when you're going to locate birds, like what are you looking for?
Well, I mean obviously there has to be birds in the area, you know what I mean, but if you're looking for them, you know, at night or in the evenings, you know, you just we used to blow the owl hooters and stuff like that, you know, and
crow calls.
You know, crow calls, and but I've done some things, you know, that out of the ordinary. No, I you know, I mean, because a lot of times, you know, like what used to happen, because there wasn't that many birds, you know, you blow an owl hooter and that turkey's over there going, you're not gonna do it.
Yeah.
I'm not gonna gobble. You know, I mean, because you got 10 guys blowing owl hooters, you know, so. I got an air horn.
Yep.
Shock gobbles, you know what I mean? You guys ready? You know, I used to hit them with that, you know. It worked for a while, you know. Then everybody had air horns, you know, so you can't use them all the time.
So slamming a car door.
Car doors, yeah. You know. And here's the thing, too, you know, we used to, it happened to us a lot of times. You know, we'd get out of the car, bang, slam the door. Turkey gobbles. Everybody, get your shit run. You know, get over here, you know. The next thing you know, you're calling the turkey. He's strutting around your car. You know, he's over there going like, why in the hell did we ever do that? We could have laid down underneath it, you know. But they're just, today, they you know, they do so many weird things, you know.
Or if you called, or if you got out of the car and tried to locate him with the call.
Oh, yeah.
That's
oh,
really,
that's bad.
Then they're to the car.
Yep.
Yeah.
All the time.
So, James, like, what do you guys do as far as, like, locating birds, say, out on public?
I'm going to go
like
with air horn.
Yeah.
We're air horn guys?
I'm going to just guess.
They're lightweight, you know. Yeah, we were just talking about this. I mean, it's the same type of deal. Look for where they're roosting. You know, we seem to find them in hilly areas, especially with some water nearby. You cut them off between there and food. Look for a strut zone. When you find, like, a good strut zone.
Yeah.
Man, we got one that
what's
literally.
What's a strut zone?
Jared, the technical definition is.
Jared. Oh man! So what we found a strut zone is it's basically where a tom's going to go, and he's just going to sit there and strut probably around
when he comes out in the morning. They like to do
the,
that
the turkeys.
Midday.
I mean, they'll flock up in the morning when they come off the roost and they'll feed. But then after the hens start making their way back to their nest, all these horny toms are going to be like, "Well, we want to keep breeding," so they're going to go to the most. It's going to be a secluded area. It's going to be away from harm. But it's going to be a place where they can sit maybe in the sunlight and just sit there and strut. And if you can find these places, you will consistently get turkeys almost every time.
Like at least like a little, like almost like a, not a
like
bench.
An old logging road.
A logging
that's
road
a good strut
they love.
Zone. Yes, yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. We found one that's like we were talking about on the way here that it's such a good predictable spot. It's on public land.
Yeah.
And it, but they're always strutting there. Like every year it's like a
you
historic
can find them.
Spot.
Yep.
They want to be seen.
Yeah, yes, exactly. Right. Exactly. They want to be seen, 100%.
Like a tall, mature woods where you can see almost like 200 yards. Like if he gobbles, if he hears a hen and he gobbles off, he wants that hen to be able to see her. So it's like those type of areas. It could be very secluded. But again, it's got to be open so that other turkeys can see them and they can see them.
And so how would you identify that? You go, you get your morning set up, right? You call, you get some answers, then the birds move off or whatever. You're not getting any response.
They're hand up.
Let's say that you heard some gobbles like off the roost, and then obviously they're down now. You maybe heard a gobble as soon as they hit the ground, and then, you know, now you're 10, 11 o'clock, and you're like, the bugs are bad. Like, I'm hot. I'm hungry. And you're like, okay, we're going to go see maybe where those turkeys went or whatever. How do you, without seeing the turkey strutting, like, how are you identifying one of those strut zones?
That's a good question.
I mean, so here's what we do. Here's what we do. You gotta see them, but here's what we've done. Usually, you try to catch them off the fly down, right? And then if that doesn't work and you're trying to just run and gun, then we're looking for those spots that we, you know, you find some elevation, you pin them on a map, and we'll just like kind of walk towards it, check it out, and call, you know, every 100 yards or so as we go, see if we can strike something up. But like, usually it starts with us, like we talked about for deer hunting, look at the topo map and look like what maybe would have something, and then you just got to go check it out. At least that's how we've done it.
You find them zones, though, like, you know, like when we've been walking down the two tracks or whatever, them sand blows and stuff.
Yeah.
You'll find the figure eights where they've been strutting and stuff.
We'll see wing drags in the dirt.
You know, dragging their wings and everything, you know. Big tracks, you know, and that's where, you know, that's what we always look for.
Yep,
you know?
Exactly.
And you'll just post up. Usually it's like kind of sandy and stuff.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's usually, you know, like a lot of sand blow areas like that, you know, they like. I don't know why.
No.
I'm a pretty simpleton turkey hunter, I think, and I've always had a little bit of success with. I don't feel like turkeys can spend any amount of time in any area without just ripping it up. They're like constantly pulling at the ground and eating bugs and this and that. I mean, they never stop. So I've just had good luck walking through the timber and finding where it's like, this is pretty obvious. Yeah, there's some turkeys in here. This will be my start. This is my starting point, right? Yeah.
So from that, from your starting point, is that where I guess, how are you approaching that? So are you saying, okay, I think that this is where I'm going to set up and I think they're going to roost. Are you coming back for them to come back to roost? Are you going to watch that area? Are you setting up a cell cam so you can just know exactly?
Well, I haven't turkey hunted since I got cell cams, but I could see doing that, putting them on a field. But what I have done is I've taken cameras and put them on time lapse on a field, and I'll have them watch that field, and then a couple days before the season, I'll pull that and I'll look and I can see, oh yeah, every morning here's exactly where they're coming out of the field, you know. And the couple times that I've used that tactic, I just went in and sat up on where that I saw that. And sure, I mean, they're pretty much like clockwork until they get screwed up, right?
Yeah.
If they're left alone, they won't, where they want to come down in the morning and do their strutting and hanging out, that it's not too far from where they are, right?
Right.
So you can try to get in on where they're coming down or kind of know where they're going and intercept at any point. The sun comes up pretty early that time of year. You got to get out there pretty damn early. That doesn't coexist real well with late nights. So I like a spot that I could get to kind of easy. And if it's like the field edge, because I know that's kind of where their destination, I'm not going to try to get in and tight on them and have a one bird halfway and screw that up. I'd just rather be where I feel like they're coming. And I've used trail cameras on time lapse to watch pieces of field. And you can see a pattern, and as long as nobody's got in there ahead of you, you know, that probably won't be. Well, I imagine there's a lot of places on public land that aren't getting screwed up by pressure. But obviously, if you have a private field, like, you can kind of make that your baby. And until you go in there and educate them, they'll stay on kind of the same pattern. At least I've seen that.
And so then how close are you guys getting to these birds on the roost?
100 yards, maybe. Sometimes closer. Sometimes I've walked right under them and not even known it. And like you look up and then you just see them like they're like really stiff and sleep. And it's like, holy cow, they're right up there. So
or they take off and make you just shit your pants.
Yeah. Yeah. Probably 100 yards, would you say?
I like hunting turkeys on a roost. You know exactly where they are. They're gobbling on the tree. But
you put them to bed the night before.
Right,
which is kind of
right?
Fun.
You're super excited about it. But like I was explaining to James on the truck right up here. If you take a clock and set it on this table, and if this is the tree, and you put that right in the
middle
of the clock.
Not a digital clock, by the way.
Right? So you
that's
got
my first question.
You're imagining this clock around, and you got the tree in the middle. And say the turkey's roosting in there. And you pick one of the spots on the clock, right? A lot of people will say those turkeys are going to fly down away from the sun because they don't want to see the sunlight that they're flying into. They're going to fly away from it. You can take that or leave it. But think of your percentage of that turkey actually flying down in your direction or the other turkeys that it's following down in that same direction. A lot of people are very successful with hunting turkeys off the roost. I think it's
we do. We start that way every time.
We will start that way every time. But it's also it can be a very much hit or miss. Like your percentages of those turkeys actually flying down your way and coming your way, it's very minimal. Yeah. So we'll start there first because you know where the turkeys right are.
It's really exciting when you hear right on them. When you hear them in the roost just going off in the morning, you can hear them like setting each other off down a ridge or something. Like that's a cool time, but it's what happens after that's like that's more fun.
So or right above you.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. That's terrible.
Mm-hmm. And you think you can call one of those over to you, but they will not honor that call. Do you ever run into that? Because
I think that's even
oh yeah.
Because the insubordinates will not run over there either and check it out.
Yeah, so
usually the hens if they get you got a decoy, sometimes they'll get pissed.
Oh yeah. Mm-hmm. Clucking and yeah.
What
yeah.
Are you doing here?
Yeah.
But yeah.
I can never call them.
Yeah, so Frank, I think we'll get into this for you because I was going to ask you guys, like, so how much do you think, like, calling comes into it, hunting them off the roost versus not?
I don't know. Not me. When I'm doing it, it might just be hurting me out there, you know. It might just be better not doing anything and just waiting for luck.
Because this is kind of like to your point over here with the question of you know, getting these birds hung up or not getting them to come in, not being able to, you know, you'll get answers, but you can't get them to commit. Kevin, to your point with like, yeah, it's early, right? Frank, I've learned he's not an early riser. He's not trying to roost these birds or whatever. He's confident enough in his calling to say, we'll just get out there gray light or so. We'll let the woods tell us what we need to do.
I like that approach. I like it.
But he can call, so that's where, like, my learning has been, like, learning how to call and do this. And for you, when we go out there in the gray light, and we're standing there at the truck or whatever, and you're doing your, you know, do the air horn in the morning, but you hit them with a couple calls or whatever, like, how are you approaching the woods, like, at that time, where you're saying there should be turkeys over here?
Yeah.
But
You know, and I listen for them too. You know, I mean, I usually wait till I hear one. You know, and if I don't get a gobble, you know, I mean, on their own, then I'll do something. You know, but it isn't very much usually then. But what I found is, like you guys, you know, when you hunt them off the roost, it seems like in the morning, man, if they don't fly down to you,
they're going everywhere.
Yeah, they're going somewhere totally. Else with those hens. You know what I mean? So you're wasting your time is what you're doing sometimes there. You know, but that's part of the hunt. You know. But what I find is later in the day, I'll go back to those areas, and I'll have more success that way,
yep.
You know, by doing a sequence of calls or whatever, you know, because the hens are they're leaving the hens, you know, and then the gobblers are looking around, you know. And they're more susceptible, I think, you know, midday. I like to hunt 11 to 2 or whatever, you know, and thinking that's a prime time. Right there to call a bird and kill a bird, you know. But we found since we've been bow hunting them, these guys like to set the decoys up a little close to the tent, you know what I mean? I mean, you know, from here to the chair there, you know. And I mean, when, you know, when we've got a spot where these birds like to fly down to, don't they? Mm-hmm. And when you got your decoys out there and everything and you don't give them a lot, you know. The last one, we were sitting in the tent last year, and I made
one call.
Yeah, but he's, you know, I said, do you want me to call? And he looks at me and he goes, "Well, I'd kind of like to do it." I said, "Go for it." And he made one call, and like, here they come. I mean, they were like flying down around us and everything and running up to the decoy and stuff. I'm filming, you know, and then all of a sudden it was whap, you know, he shoots his turkey. You know, we're high-fiving in there and stuff, you know, and all of a sudden turkey gets up and takes off running. I'm going to go after him, you know. Jesus. But we got him. It was really crazy there for a little while.
Yeah, the video. You see Adam run into the woods. Then all of a sudden over here, you see a turkey go running. Then all of a sudden you see Adam run across.
Yeah.
That's some good shit.
Yeah.
It was.
That's hilarious. It's not the first time that's happened.
No.
you will end up chasing a turkey or two and bow hunting for sure.
Being in the woods, turkey hunting in the spring is the most audible enjoyable that the forest will be like all year, with like when they come up off the roost and they start lighting the woods up, and then all the other birds and the frogs and stuff that's going on is like, man, somebody should record that shit and for grown ass men have that next to your bed,
right?
You know, that plays that. I don't want to hear waterfalls. I want to hear some gobbles in the distance, you know, and then maybe they're coming closer to me, because that's the coolest thing when you get a bird that you know it's moving in your direction. You're like, oh shit, I wish deer did this, you know, like told me they're coming my way. Man, that'd be great, but they don't. But turkeys do, and for that reason, they are so fun to hunt.
Oh, yeah. But what was it, 2 years ago that you shot the one there?
Yeah.
Same spot? We were going into this area. We hunted a morning. I called a bird in for our other buddy. He killed it behind his brother's house. And
that was the morning
we set up directly underneath
it. Underneath the birds.
Roosted some birds, and put it on. I'm like, I think they're about 100 yards that way. So then they had him and we're walking in the dark, and I didn't want to like look at my maps. I'm like, man, we're close. Like we need. And then I looked, and I was like, oh shit, we're like too close. So we backed up, and then set up the tent, and then they're like, I'm like, he's gobbling. Like I couldn't even tell which way he was, because it was so right close. Above us, and my tent, and that was during. So it was 3 seasons ago because it was COVID.
Right.
So I was outside of the tent.
He was outside of the tent. And then then we did kill the birds. We had two tents. Adam was filming in one. I was sitting in one. Ernie was on a log behind me. And then 10 yards behind him was Frank.
I was on the same log. Okay. Oh, yeah. We go into this spot, though, because them guys blew up in the morning. So we go over to this other area. And we're walking in there, you know, four of us, you know, walking in with this gear and stuff. And all of a sudden, the turkeys are all standing right there, you know. And then they start moving off.
Yep.
And I just, get down, you know. So they all get down. And then these guys are bummed out.
Oh, well, I was pissed.
Yeah, the turkeys, we spooked them. Well, we blew it again, you know, and all this, you know. And I said, just calm down a minute, you know. So let the turkeys walk. They didn't run or anything, really, you know. So we walk in there. Set the tents up, sent the decoys up. How many cameras did we have out?
A lot.
Put all these cameras
seven.
Out.
Six, seven.
Seven.
These guys are in the tents, you know. One's filming, the other's going to shoot. Me and Ernie get back by this log, you know, and I'm leaning up against this log, and then Ernie's a little ways away from me, you know, over the 6 feet, of course.
Mm-hmm.
You know. And all of a sudden, you know, I start calling. I do a few sequences, you know. And then all of a sudden I hear a hen yelp, you know. And then I hear something, though, and the biggest fox squirrel you've ever seen in your life goes down the log, and Ernie's head is right up against the log. This sucker was on the back of his head, went by him. And I'm going, I'm looking at this thing. It looked like a house cat, you know? And I'm going, oh, my God, he's going to jump up or something, you know? And he didn't. In the squirrel runoff, next thing you know, I hear a hen yelp again. And just down from Ernie, I hear these turkeys coming. Three times went over the log right there, just right next to them. And they split our cameras, run up to the decoys, didn't they? And I mean, they were all out there in front.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then wild man here.
Yeah.
Let her rip.
Yeah. Those three nice toms come in, and we had the Jake decoy with the bedded hen, wasn't it?
Yeah,
we do that.
And, dangerous combo.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
That's a good combo.
And it was to the point where I'm like, normally Adam's in the tent. What? So, like, one on the left, one on the right, whatever, like, picking. I'm like, I don't know which one he's got on camera. And so, and then they're just, the two of them are just, like, pecking at at the decoy. Like, and so they're all straight. I was drawn back for like over a minute. And I'm just sitting there holding it. And I was like, oh, one on the left. He's got a better shot. No, one on the right. And then finally I shot and I, you know, cut half of his neck off. And then he ran over. And we were close to a residential area, you know. Mm-hmm. So I didn't want
close enough for the turkey to make it there.
Well, you wouldn't want him running up the hill, you know.
No, but so I'm like, so my secondary arrow was a shred head.
Yeah,
and it actually worked out pretty cool because I shoot six veins, like the big 5-inch mm-hmm. fluorescent green veins.
Six of them.
Six of them.
And, wait, you're shooting a compound?
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh yeah.
And so
this is specific for your turkey hunting arrow?
Just my turkey.
Okay. Okay. Were you just to was clarify. It a big head, broadhead?
Yeah, so I was shooting the Magnus bullheads.
Oh yeah, okay. Yeah, yeah.
And so that first shot, it was just off a little bit and it ended up being like 25 pounds.
Yeah,
just
a big bird.
Just a duke. Sweet. And the blade slit its neck, but it broke the blade off. And so it didn't cut his head off.
Right.
But then it ran out and I'm like, shit. So I knocked my secondary arrow.
As anyone would say.
Yeah.
And I had to get off the stool and lean out. And the angle of it, Adam's tent was, like, behind me. And so the video, like, you can see it looks like a green golf ball.
Smoke
them at the second
shot.
That's
awesome.
Yeah. That's really cool.
But in the film, you could actually – he was dying. Like, you can see the blood.
Yeah, right.
But I think one of the things about that hunt in particular, and one thing Frank does really well is like the, it's like staying calm and like the soft calling. Because I think just like with anything, like you see a deer, like kind of like, get down, like, oh, he's right there. Like, I think we kind of overthink it. And especially with turkeys, like you hear one and you're like, oh my God, I got to call to him. I got to freaking, you know, I got to give him everything I got, you know. And if he's not answering, then he's not interested. But I don't think that's really... like how you view it, right?
No. Well, you've been around me long enough to know.
They haven't. Come on.
I go into it. You know, I kind of test the water with them. You know what I mean? If the bird's answering me good, I'll keep calling. You know, but if he's kind of reluctant, sometimes I'll just hesitate for a while. You know,
it's almost like elk calling. Like you gotta bring up their temperature a little bit.
Yeah.
But I find the best hunts. I went out behind my house a couple of years ago. I probably got out there, you know, it was well after gray light, you know.
In your underwear.
Yeah. No, I had the camo on. But I got this favorite pine tree. We've killed a lot of birds by this. So I get out there and I'm by myself. No decoys or nothing. I get out there and nothing's going on, you know. Heard these birds gobble way off in the morning, you know. Nothing. So it says time to take a nap, you know. So I laid down underneath my tree. I woke up, sun was shining on me, you know, and it was about 12 o'clock. Looked at, I said, it's time to kill a turkey, you know. I ain't kidding you. It was about three calls, and here they come. Come running right in. I end up gunning the one, you know, but it was like, yeah, pick him up, go up to the house, you know what I mean? Yeah. But it was like, you know, that's, you know, sometimes that's how it works out, you know. That's the best time, you know. You might have to take that little, you know, time to relax, yes, you know.
That's the best sleep you've ever had.
It was great. I mean, I just.
Oh, yeah.
And I'll tell you, it's the most.
You're right about
peaceful.
That. Pretty peaceful.
It is.
That's what's really nice about turkey hunting, too. And I'll say for getting kids and even people into hunting, you know, later on set adults, but specifically kids, because they get cold easy. They're not that durable yet. Taking them out spring and turkey hunting is a great way to bring kids into hunting.
So I've seen you guys kill turkeys with a bow, mm-hmm. and I think killing them with a bow. You kind of almost have to decoy them. Mm-hmm. But where are you guys at with like decoying turkeys? Because for years, Frank was like, we're not using decoys, it just spooks the birds. Like, you can call them a little bit easier. Yeah,
that was because of the quality. Yeah.
Quality is very different. Yeah. Some of that stuff now is super.
But I've had scenarios where I feel like my decoys kind of screwed me.
Oh, yeah.
If they can see them from a long enough distance, then they come up in real patiently and they're like, I don't think so, jerk off. That thing hasn't moved in 30 minutes. Yeah. I've been standing here watching it. It's not moving. I get it.
Well, how many times have you had this happen? You got the deke setting out in front of you, birds are coming from the other way, gobbling, gobbling, gobbling. All of a sudden, he's 50 yards from the decoy, and he stops, and he starts strutting.
Yep.
And he doesn't come any closer. Nope. Yeah, you know what I mean? You can't get that bird in come any closer. Nope.
Yeah,
you know?
Aim high, play the wind a little bit at that point.
Yeah.
That's why you put him 5 feet in front of the blind.
That's why these guys, you know what I mean? I think it's too tight myself, you know, but, I mean, they're pretty successful.
Our success rate's been pretty high.
Yeah, it's been pretty good.
Yeah. We do a lot of run and gun style in the afternoon. Mm. And so often that means you're walking, you're calling, trying to locate, yeah, and then try to figure out a way, especially during that hot time that you mentioned, Frank.
Mm-hmm.
And so sometimes you just don't have time to throw. Like you hear a gobble and it's like, oh, it's time to go. And so we're like, I would say like 50-50 depending. You know, we were working real hard to get me. Our goal was to get a recurve kill without a blind, mm-hmm, run and gun. And we with
so
no decoys. We got real close, but we kept having the hard part is the drawback, right? Because you can draw, right, when they're behind with your compound, hold, wait for him to come out, and, right, you know, fire off a shot. But with like a recurve, it's like, well, you know, let it go right away. So I would say, I don't know, would you agree, Jared, about half the time?
Oops. I would say in the morning I'm more susceptible to using decoys. I like to be able to have a little flock out there so that when all these turkeys are flying down, you know, they can see something. I've had it where my primary setup is a half strut Jake with a lone like breeder hen where she's kind of like laying down a little bit, getting
the
ready.
The back
to get
end's kind of, yeah, yeah.
I'll use those too, and I will face them. Pretty if I'm hunting with a bow, I'll face the decoys directly at me, because when a Tom's coming in, he's gonna come around and face the front side of your male decoy if you're using one. So if you have that, if you have the decoys facing to you or kind of quartering to on either side, they're gonna come and turn and have their fan sticking right to you, and that's where you can draw right there.
You get your target.
Right, but yeah. I don't use that when we're out running gunning. Like, I'll
throw a hen in, usually. I'll have, like, a hen with or something sometimes.
Right.
Yeah.
But most of the time, if you get a Tom to gobble off while you're running gunning, you've got sometimes seconds before he's, right, he could, yeah, be running,
yeah,
right in.
Yeah. Yeah.
You never know.
Yeah.
Other than that, no.
Have you guys ever shot your own decoy?
Close.
No. Shotgun or bow?
Bow.
I did just to see how it would penetrate.
Yeah.
And to see if my sight was on, be honest,
was it?
With you.
Me too.
Yes.
Brand new Avian.
That
X.
Wasn't the reason.
Really?
Who shot yours? So.
It went through the turkey,
yeah,
and into the decoy. But, you know.
You hate that.
Know your target and what's beyond.
That's
it.
Right. That's 101 stuff. Yeah.
These guys have had more turkeys spin the decoy on the stake. You know what I mean? He gets right up there and he's chest bumping him and spinning, mm-hmm, him around, you know, and then all of a sudden, thud. You know?
Yeah.
he shoots one and the arrow was in the decoy through the turkey. Turkey took off running, you know. Arrow's still here.
At least you know where your arrow is.
That's, yeah, right. It's a good backdrop.
You're going to have to look around for it.
But if it's inflatable, you're going to need some of that tire filler stuff.
We tried that.
I tried that.
Did that work all right?
Tried a Moxie.
No.
It worked for one season.
One season.
Yeah. Okay, all right.
No, we retired him this
year.
He's
you can turn it. You fill him with foam, and I've used him for targets.
Yeah.
So what about calling? That's obviously a huge thing. We've touched on it a little bit, but let's get maybe a little bit specific about that, and then we've got a little list of tack things to run through too. Whatever else we need to mention about turkey hunting, but I feel like the calling thing's really important, right? So, like, what are you're attempting to do? Communicate with the bird to entice him to come your direction, right?
Well, I guess I just try to sound as much as like a hen as I can, you know. But I found over the years I have a tendency to go to my friction calls.
I was going to ask you, because there's quite a few. What is there, three or more different types of turkey calls?
I use slates in a lot of box calls and stuff like that. I still use the diaphragms, but, you know, I have a thing that I do, and Adam's been with me enough times to, you know, like if we go into an area and we get maybe heard a bird gobble or something, and we'll do some calling, you know, we'll sit around for an hour or so, and then if nothing happens, I give them. What do they
that
call
top
it?
Shelf?
The Ball Busters Rhapsody on there, you know? I mean, I get every call I got out.
Yeah, and that's
it. And I start banging on them. I mean, I'll start cackling, cutting, you know, box calls, gobbling, everything else. Do it for, what, 10 minutes or so? Shut up. Nothing. They can't stand it. I'm not lying. There'll be one over there somewhere, and all of a sudden, what was that? Yeah. What's going on? Where'd they go? You know?
Are you trying to mimic like a flock by doing all
just,
that?
Just a crazy
just
man.
Just a crazy a chaos. Of breed you know fest, I mean? Baby.
I'm just saying.
That's just
you know?
Crazy Frank
Cause,
over
yeah, because you know what? And all of a sudden, he can't stand it anymore, can he?
Yeah.
He'll cut loose. And I'll let him go. I'll let him gobble again, you know? Pretty soon, he starts gobbling a little more. Then I might give him a little bit of the old slate, you know, or something like that.
It's a little teaser.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Then he goes, oh, yeah. Yeah. She's over there.
She's
you know,
ready.
Yeah. Yep. And they'll come in how many times, man? It's like, you know, it's really weird, you know. But
You're describing Jared in high school. I knew him. And it's like, man, get out of his way.
Hot to trot. Hot to trot, fellas.
But, you know, it's like anything when you're using a call for an animal or deer call or elk or whatever, you just have to more or less listen to what that animal's doing too, you know, and sometimes they're just not going to come. It just ain't going to happen, you know. Or what we found too in the last probably 10 years, these birds are coming in quiet now.
Mm-hmm.
They won't say a word. We've had birds gobbling over here. All of a sudden, that one came through the field, you know, and he comes strutting across his field, never said a word, you know, came right to the decoy, you know, from 200 yards away, but. And then we had birds come in behind us the same day, you know, quiet.
And I think
predators, I think, or something like that, or pressure, you know.
But I think that goes back to your point where you're not calling in, like, these subordinate birds, or it becomes a little bit more difficult. It's a little bit easier, I think, like they're saying, later in the afternoon with these strut zones and finding these birds, like, after they've kind of already broke up. Because those subordinate birds, like that the one I pinned to the decoy, what he's talking about there. But the one that came in quiet, these birds that come in quiet, they're used to getting their asses kicked by that boss gobbler. And so when he's around or when they're together, you know, that's what's hanging them up. But once you get them to spread out, and it's funny, we were talking about it on the way up here, like what a lot of guys do in the fall is they'll run a dog out there and bust up a flock and then come back in and kind of round them back up.
Kiki run.
Mm-hmm.
But that's what happens, like, in the afternoons. These birds are kind of all spread out. And that's where you get, you know, it seems like, you know, we're turkey hunting, so we think that we're doing, like, a good thing. Like, we're in the right spot. But you go to some of these areas, you get out of the truck, you walk out there, and how many times that 1 o'clock, noon, like, you get out of the truck, and then all of a sudden you just hear a gobble, and you're like, okay. But you just went to this big spot, and it's, you know, sunny out, like these birds, you went to an area where you think there's going to be turkeys, and you know they're trying to find their next girlfriend, right? They're out there. And what I was talking about, where I think we tend to, in the morning, especially off the roost, and I think maybe that's a good thing to talk about, is like timing. But where you need to know when they're in the tree, when they've hit the ground, and then how much to call, because when there's a bunch of turkeys in the trees and they're all gobbling. It sounds like one turkey's just going crazy, but like you said, it's these turkeys, it's multiple birds up there that are gobbling. And if you're, you know, giving them too much, that's when they fly down and just go the other way. They don't want any part of that. Or, I mean, I've had it where one of the best, like, learning experiences for me was, like you said, the boss Tom, but like that boss hen, like I've been calling for other people, you know, and you're out there, you know, trying to call these birds over here, and then you get one of these hens that's pissed off. Well, you can get them to bring the whole flock over there, but sometimes I just mimic what she's doing. Like every time she's spitting and, you know, all that stuff, I'm just trying to do what she's doing. I have no idea how to speak turkey, but I'm just doing what she does just to kind of make her mad. And a lot of times that just, you know, she wants, just like these toms do, they get pissed and they want to come over and give you the business.
Do you ever have Jakes come and beat up a Tom in front of your set? Do you ever have a couple of Jakes show up and do that? Did you ever see that?
We'll just kill them. Yeah. Like, I mean,
I like that.
I mean, like, I've never been on a turkey hunt where I'm like, yeah, that one's too small.
Oh,
like,
me either. No. Jakes are in play. Yep.
This guy lets arrows go, believe me. You don't fool around.
I like that about you, by the way. Yeah.
Like, no hesitation.
No, you don't want that.
No, I'm not like, oh, man, a Jake. Like, nope, he's dead.
Well, he even shot a bearded hen.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's in play. Yeah.
I didn't, in my defense, I didn't even know that they existed. And it was literally the last day of season. I called in these turkeys, and I was like, man, that turkey's not very big.
It was
big.
Ringing in, too.
But it's got like a 6-inch beard, and that's like right there. It's like one in the hand, or there's a bigger one over there. I'm like, this one's dead.
Yep.
Like, dead.
Yep.
So,
But
the Bearded Hen is a great bar name if like for like a certain very specific type of bar. You know, there it is. Yeah, there it is. Yeah. I was thinking about it for a while. Yeah.
Yeah.
Not my kind of bar. Just for that.
Or it is, whatever. Either way.
I would say just don't call too much. I feel like a lot of turkey hunters will just call too much.
Yeah. I've called too much in my life.
And I've had to warn you about that. Like, Jimmy?
Shut up, man. I'm like, trust me on this. This is going to be a good walk.
Settle it.
You know, just going to town.
This is the one that's really going to drive the nail in the coffin.
You know, you kind of
really
like
move
it,
the hands around a
when
lot.
When it comes to calling, by the way, I like it. If you're showing somebody and they're a turkey hunter, they still do this.
Yep.
Even though they don't need to direct it, but they're like, show me a call. It's like, it's like, you don't need to do that. You're just hiding your mouth at this point. You're not tricking me where the sound's coming from, you know.
That's too funny. Well, I'm thinking about big brined turkey breast smoked and then sliced up and make a sandwich out of it now that we're talking about this. That people are missing out. They're sleeping on how good wild turkey is if you do the right stuff with it, man. It's incredible table fare.
Mm. Well, we do the breast, but we deep fry them. But we cut them. You know, we cut them up in chunks, and then, you know, like you do fish.
Like a nugget, turkey nugget.
Do you tenderize them at all?
No, right here.
You don't take the meat hammer out?
Tenderize them like meat.
Right in between the molars.
What about the legs? Is anybody keeping turkey legs?
Well,
yeah.
Slow cooking.
A lot of people put those to waste, and we've cooked them. Yeah,
put them in a crock pot bag.
Yeah,
cooking bag is about the only way you can really, you know,
like a sous vide style.
All those things are sticking out.
That's a lot of
You got
a lot of business there.
A crock pot. If you do it in a crock pot, you just take the whole leg or leg quarter, you put it in a crock pot. And you just cook that thing down, and then you can pull it apart.
Right.
And then what you got to do is you pull it apart, and you'll have, like, one big pile of meat and one big pile of unedible stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then you take all that meat, and I'll usually throw it back in the pan, and you can make sandwiches out of that. That dark meat is that's the money in the bank for me.
Good broth. It'll make good broth, too.
Yeah.
Yeah. Even the feet. Have you ever done the feet before? Mm. Makes fantastic broth. It's got more the collagen in it.
Turkey feet you kick?
You've never done that? I have a bag of chicken feet in my fridge right now that'll make broth out of it. It's great. It does make great soup.
I got a garage full of dried ones if you can do that.
Yeah, I got a bunch of them, too.
Rehydrate.
The butcher's always like, you sure you want all these feet? I'm like, that's right. It's good soup, man. Yeah, don't ask any questions.
Anybody have any turkey hunting questions that before we maybe move on? Is there anything, Frank, is there anything that we missed, maybe pertinent information?
I don't think so. I just think that, you know, you don't have to be a championship caller to call a bird in, though. I mean, you want to have the right cadence, you know, on your calls and stuff, but. I've heard some pretty shitty calls out there that called in birds. You know what I mean?
I've heard some pretty shitty calls. That's
me right here.
Show this in, buddy.
That's right. I'll show you that. Yeah.
But I just feel like, say, just about anybody could do it if you just put a little bit of time in, you know, and just you got to pay attention to birds, you know, what they're doing, and just take your time, you know. Be you don't have to be rushed about it, you know, because what did I always tell you? Adam says, where do them birds go? I said, they're just out there doing turkey stuff, you know? That's what they do. You know, they'll go over here and do turkey stuff, and then they'll go over there, you know? And then they're going to come over here and you're going to kill them.
Yeah. While they're doing turkey stuff.
Yeah.
Words of wisdom from Frank over here.
That's a good point. That's to what you said too, Jared. Overcalling. You get all excited when you hear a thing. You want to just engage and go hard, and especially younger guys, I'm sure, is, you know.
And then pay attention to the – pay attention to movement, because there's so many of them that come in now silent. I mean, I've sat there and I know you guys have probably done it too. Call for an hour, you know, and you're getting patient, you know, and you're thinking, man, my ass hurts, you know, I got to get up. First thing I do is get up on my knees and you hear, pack,
pack, yeah,
pack, there, and there he goes, you know. I mean, he was right there, you know. Yeah. So, I mean, just it takes patience, you know, and just being in the woods.
Just have fun and don't forget the breakfast pizza.
Oh, yeah, you got to have breakfast pizza.
Well, and you got to remember, I always tell Jared, you got to scent spray your all your decoys. Because they'll
We're coming out with a turkey scent spray.
Yeah. Scent elimination
turkey
spray.
Turkey and heat.
Turkey and heat is going to be a game changer for the industry. Yeah.
Maybe an electronic thing that heats it up.
That's right. You remember those things you light the
incense?
Yeah, we used to have those. Yeah.
No, we didn't.
Oh, yeah, the bucket. My uncle would
toss me in that trash can.
Sorry, I did. I said we.
The turkey stuff and the strut zone could both be good t-shirts.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yep.
Turkey stuff.
I like that.
I like that, too. And the strut zone.
Welcome to the strut zone.
Welcome to the strut zone. Only one of us is leaving happy.
Right. That's right. That's right. I like that.
What about the bearded hen?
The bearded hen. It's an old-looking bar on the front. Yeah.
James's face on it.
Shouldn't have said it. That's right. Yeah, that's right. I don't know what that's for.
Well, let's move on to the tech portion of this. I feel like this is really valuable. There's like some technical information in here that's really valuable, especially the first question somebody asked was, how much beer do I bring to TAC? I thought that we have the right people to answer the question on board today here. So
you guys have shot TAC?
How
many people in here have done the Total Archery Challenge? Okay.
How many arrows did you lose? Hey, my boy back there. Only zero, huh?
Only zero?
Only zero.
So how much beer do you bring? How much
you
is
you got
to
stash it. So they don't – do they let you even? I don't know. I didn't check. I just feel like I had to hide it.
We don't shoot on the range.
Yeah, neither do we.
Drink on the range?
Yeah. I mean, we don't shoot. We don't do shooters on the range.
Yeah, you'll bring a few with. Some road pops, you know.
That's hilarious. Well, it depends on what the weather is, but honestly, the one year that I went, it was maybe a struggle to even get through the whole thing. It was so damn hot. So
it was hot.
I like the idea of earn a beer, get through your shooting, and then be ready to celebrate aggressively for either that you did great or to bury your sorrows that you did like dog shit.
All the fallen soldiers in the trees out there.
That's right.
Well, I think that's maybe like a misconception about the Total Archery Challenge. It's like, it's not a...
It's not a competition.
It's not a competition.
No.
Like, everything's a competition.
when a guy tells me, you know, the target's 80 yards, you know, and they put these orange cones up there, right? And I get up there, you know, and I'm looking at it, you know, and the guy says, well, you got to have your foot on the stake.
Wow.
What? I said, watch this. I get over about 10 feet. What do you think of that one, bud? You the judge or the boss or what, you know? I don't think so. My legs ain't that long.
So, like, the distances that they shoot are, you know, on some of the locals' courses, like 25 yards, and then, like, out to, like, 120.
Oh, yeah. You got to get that third axis, by the way.
Well, yeah, that's one of the questions on here. But so, and John is, like, our resident bow tech. He does all of our stuff for our bows. He builds our own strings, builds arrows. He's super
good guy to have.
Yeah,
nerdy,
right.
I guess, when you come to that stuff. But it says, like, can I shoot that far? Like, so, like, an average guy with their, you know, 60-pound bow, 28-inch, 29-inch draw.
50 yards feels like a poke.
Well, their question is, can they reach out to 100 yards? It all depends on, so, like, when I build my bow for tack, like, a lot of guys, when they, like, they set their peep sight, right, they'll set it at 20. So, like, when I'm building my bow for that, I'll set my peep sight at, like 60-yard pin, so I'm adjusting. You know, it might be a little bit of an adjustment for your anchor point and everything. But the other thing, too, is, like, I shoot a smaller scope. I might go to a little bit lighter arrow. You know, if you really want to go there and shoot the full long distance, you might have to change up some stuff. Like, your normal hunting bow, most normal hunting bows aren't going to reach out, you know, to 100 yards. In a, you know, 60-pound, like Frank's shooting 54, you know, 80 yards, you're pushing it without doing some major adjustments.
That's without skips.
Yeah, right. You got to skip one in there.
You
it still,
skip
ca-
one,
it still counts.
You know,
still
I can
counts.
Shoot
a skip
about
counts.
900, you
but,
know?
You know, for me, I mean, it's a little different. Like, I'm 6'3", I shoot 75 pounds normally, and it's not – I can shoot out to 150 yards without – and I shoot a smaller scope, but you know, it's.
Do you adjust where your anchor point is to like based on a distance? So some guys will like, you know, walk it down their face a little bit more to get.
So that's what he's saying about moving his peep.
Okay, I see. So do you move your peep actually or not just?
So like when I'm building the bow for tack, yeah. So when I'm setting it and getting everything ready, I'm not doing it. I'm not sighting it in at 20 yards with my peep. I'm doing 60 yards. So then I'm getting my peep centered there. You can do it at 40 too. But it's just giving me a little more clearance.
Yeah.
And it is because if you do it at 20, then when you dial it down to 100, now you're really changing. Right. So, and most of we're shooting the longer shots. So like, I don't think there's any under 60. You know, maybe 50.
Yeah.
So now I'm more comfortable at that range, and then my longer range, I'm not dropping out.
Interesting.
So something to think about what he's saying. If you seriously want to do this, it's my advice might almost be to look at picking up a bow that's a year or two old that you can set up specifically
for that.
To go do this, because you don't really want, like, it's great. He knows how to do these things, right? You can.
Right.
But for the general public, you know, they've got to get somebody to do those services for them, and you might not want to be.
We know a guy, by the way.
Moving your peep. Yeah, right. We do know. We all kind of know a few people.
Just
right.
Send them that way.
Send them to him. But yeah, that for most of us, we can't just go in our garage and move our peep. And I don't think you want to be doing that right before hunting season. So actually setting a bow up to do that event. And 2-, 3-, 4-year-old flagship bows are
still awesome bows.
They're awesome, and they're very affordable.
Right.
And it's not bad to have a backup bow set up that you know is just like you could pick it up, it's ready to go. Because if you ever have a malfunction during season and it costs you days, that kind of sucks, especially if you're on a trip. Like, I learned that the hard way. I stopped traveling without a backup bow, you know, because I had a bow failure. I just got there. I was supposed to be there for 5 days. And I'm like, well, I'm done, you know?
Yeah.
Right.
So
I had that in Alaska this year.
Did you really?
Yeah. I was on the Dalton Highway going up. Like, you're out 5-6 hours from anywhere, right? And my rest had gotten bumped. So I'm stuck up on a caribou. It was a longer shot. It was like an 80-yard shot. But I'd prep my bow for it. That's kind of the deal out there. They don't jump. It's very manageable shot to make. And I remember I shot, and I look at my arrow sideways, and in the midair, I'm like, no, you know, because you fly, and you get it's all this work to get there. The funny thing is, it comes into 60 yards. I'm like, sweet. I mean, all summer, 80 was like, I would start at 80, right? Yep. 60, this is sweet. Same thing, sideways, blew it on it. And like, I had to go up to the oil fields to find the right hex wrench that for some reason I didn't have with me. Talk about not being prepared. and like it ruined a shot that like should have been a lot easier. I always think like, should I have brought an extra bow? I really should have brought a rifle. would have made things a lot easier. But the Dalton Highway, it's like five miles. Both sides of the highway is archery only. And so I'm like, I'm going to do the road thing. I had my wife and my daughter sleeping in the truck with me. And so I kept it to that. And like, that was midway through the trip. So it was pretty, your confidence is like low. After that, I'm like 30 yards and in. I got to figure out a way to get close to him, and didn't make it happen. So yeah. It happens.
But I think like that's all well and good, like for like the 100 plus yard shots. But even though there are like 100 plus, you know, 120 yard shots, like the longest shot,
right.
And there might be like one or two other like 190 yard shots. But I'd say like 60 to 80
is
probably
so like when. The first year we went, we didn't have any. I mean, this is
the first year was a freaking disaster from my standpoint. But
this is I'm trying to expedite everybody's learning curve here today, because if you haven't done this before,
he was already up there in Traverse City on a drinking, you know, weekend, right. And then
binge. I was gonna say, I think it's a binge.
Well, drove over to our place to hunt for the day, and or to shoot for the day, and it was like. He had no idea what it was.
Well, I don't. So we saw this Total Archery Challenge, and it wasn't like all over social media. So it was like, hey, do you guys want to do this? And they went up there for the entire weekend. I came in for Saturday, but it was like, you know, we're just going to go out with my hunting bow and we're going to shoot. Well, they hadn't streamlined the process. It was long lines. But like, one thing is like, bring a backpack, bring some water and a granola bar or something, because we were out there thinking, like, it goes a lot quicker now, but we were out there for 8 hours. Like
one course.
We were stuck at
so
one.
It's exhausting.
Shit, we were there. I bet you there was what 60 people at one Target.
Oh, that's awful. Yeah.
So it's much better than that now. Moves a lot quicker, but you know, people are like, "Well, how many arrows do I need to bring?" Like, I don't really think you if you've shot your bow and you're confident, like 60, 80 yards, I think that that's fine. That's what you know when you start to just like. That ought to do it. Like that, you know.
You're in trouble. Aim high, play the wind.
If that's your plan, then bring a lot of arrows, right? But if you're confident making a good shot on a you know basketball at 80 yards or something like that, I think you're fine. Yeah. And you know, Frank can't shoot out to anything past 80 yards. So there's a lot of that ought to do it.
Then when Chris had my son had the old bear.
Oh, yeah.
He'd draw back, you know, at the ones that were out there like 100 yards, and Ernie standing behind him and go, "You see that limb up there, Chris, above him about 12 feet? He says, aim for that right there." And he'd let it go. You know?
It was sounding like the cello.
Yeah. It was crazy.
But you were saying?
No, I forgot what I was going to say. But
I'd say, like, I think from like a normal hunting bow. Like,
normal hunting bow. Well, I mean, they're like. So TAC is famous for setting up targets that
suck.
I mean, yeah, suck.
You wouldn't take.
You're gonna
that shot.
Slap trees, and you know? There's the one they had a whole branch in front of the vitals, you know, or shoot between a crotch at 80 yards. Like, so I would bring a dozen arrows. I mean, I bring a dozen.
Yeah, that's appropriate.
And you, what do you? But
you bring it. What'd you bring? You bring one arrow.
You bring one arrow.
I knew he was going to say that.
No, I bring a dozen.
You only need one.
Yeah.
His day gets over real quick.
But yeah, so that first year it was kind of crazy. Like, you know, we had no idea. I went up, I had my old Hoyt Double XL, but it was pretty much set up for a 3D.
Okay.
And I mean, it shot good. Like, but we've seen all these guys, like, wearing shorts and t-shirts, you know, and. We've seen these guys all dressed up in camo
full
like
packs on.
Full packs.
Frame packs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, what the hell? And then we end up talking, and they're like, oh, well, we're going out west, so we're just testing our gear. Mm-hmm. Like, well, then the next year, we were going out west, and we're...
And you're those guys
now. We're those guys. And it was actually, like, so if you're planning a western hunt, and you haven't done one, it was awesome to go out there and do that and test the gear, because that's as close as you're going to get, you know, to that scenario. So we went up and we brought all of our gear, tested it.
Jet boil in the backcountry back there.
Well, we were carrying it like we didn't make our lunch bag.
You want a mountain house?
Okay, you gotta go mountain house, yeah.
And then we went drinking, I think it was Friday night, and I think we had got one hour nap, and then we had signed up for like the 6 a.m.
Bold move.
Hill hike.
See, speaking of hill hike, I always thought that tack should be flipped. I think that you should walk up the mountain, and they chairlift you back down with a beer.
Yeah, I think that's
like you make
good.
It up to the top. It's a challenge to get up. You shoot all the targets going up.
Yeah,
and that's what hunting's like. You're pretty tired by the time you.
Yeah, that would be west. Nice. That would be nice.
All right.
Oh, like
that's my little 2 cents.
You should send an email to somebody.
I know we shot the knock-on course the last 2 years, and Dudley likes to really just put it to people. So it's like up, down, up, down, up, down, up, down, up, down.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, if you want to really test your shape. And he's got very technical shots, like off angle, bad footing, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's actually a very good – you know, test.
What was that target across the valley there?
That was like a ram or something.
No, but I mean, what number was that one? Because that's where I went down the road the other way. Yeah. I'll see you boys back.
That was the armadillo at 70.
Yeah. I said, I'm leaving you guys. I'm going to go back and have a beer.
So from that like technical standpoint, one of the questions on here is like, what is third access and why is it important, and especially with the Total Archery Challenge thing?
Oh, so it's funny. One of the kids that I work with or works with me, he's like, he shoots on a Wednesday night league, and he's like, yeah, one of the guys was telling me the bubble and all that stuff, you don't need it. I'm like, well, for a hunting situation, you don't really need it, right? I mean, but I'm like, when we go up and shoot tack, we're shooting at on these off angles, side hills and stuff. And there's been a lot of times where, like, I'd say, hey, check your bubble, right? And there's field archers, you know, some of the 3D archer guys, they actually use their bubble in a wind, a crosswind situation where they know as they turn, as they quarter bubble or whatever, or lean the bubble, they know that if they got a crosswind, then they know exactly how far over they have to tip it for that arrow to come in. So if you don't have your third axis set for your angles, like a steep downhill or a steep uphill.
What is a third axis?
So the third axis is your bubble as you tip your bow. So you might have your bubble level at a level ground shooting straight. But as you go down, if that isn't tipped right on your sight bracket, as you go down, that bubble will slide one way. And then as you come up, it's going to slide the other way. So if you're shooting downhill and you think your bubble is level, it may be, but it's not correct with your sight, you're going to shoot off one way. And then as you go up, you're going to shoot the other way. So they have little brackets that you can use. They can mount it on there, tips of sight, up and down. You can try to do it with a string, but you know, you got to have multiple pins or a straight pin, straight up pin, and draw the bow back, tip up, look, and make sure everything is in line, make sure your bubble doesn't move. But on a side tail situation, you know, there's a lot of times where we're sitting there and draw back, and you think, you're like, man, I'm straight up, and then look at the bubble, and it's, holy cow, I got to lean all the way back this way.
Right.
And you wonder why you're shooting three or four. And then these are on, you know, 60-plus yard shots. Yeah. That's when you're really going to see it.
Gets amplified a lot.
Yeah. You know, it's like aiming at the moon, and 1 degree off, you're missing. But
so is this like like from a hunting standpoint, if you're just hunting whitetails in Michigan, like is third axis a thing that you should be concerned about? Or
not really. I don't think so. In my opinion, I'm no expert, but in my opinion, unless you can, I mean, you would have to really see it. There's some sites that don't even have third axis. I heard a guy say, I never had a problem with third axis until I heard about her.
Somebody added it to my bow.
Exactly. Yeah.
Put that shit on there, man, and then everything.
Ruin everything.
So now I really got shit. My first two, what? So, I mean, hunting situation, we're up 17 feet and you're shooting 20 yards. Even if you're off, even if it was off, you're, your kill zone is, what, 13 inches on a whitetail? I mean.
So then as you start to plan for some of these Western trips, so like things Western like that, hunt, like.
I go through, like, so, like, my Western setup, I like four or five, I like a multiple pin. I don't want to be messing around with the slider, you know, say we're elk hunting. But I do set it up with a slider and my 60-yard pin, or my bottom pin is my rover. So that way, say I shoot my elk. I shoot him at 40 yards with my regular setup. He runs out. Well, if he stops, I'm going to get another arrow in. And I might have time to range him, say he's 88 yards. Well, I wouldn't take that shot, you know, first, but now I want to get another arrow in. So 88 yards, I can dial it down to 88 and shoot. But we're in mountains. We're on bad. So at that point, I'm going to have all that stuff dialed in and set up. So I mean, like I said, you can buy little leveling brackets. I've taken my old a level, put it in my vise, yep. You know, pull it out, and then slide it up and down as long as you keep it flush on there. I mean, it's kind of like the poor man's leveling device. But I mean, you can get even more technical. Technically, you're supposed to have your bow drawn back because as you draw your bow back, things torque. Mm-hmm. You know, the riser might torque a little bit. So if you had like a hooter shooter, you could put it in hooter shooter, level drawn back, and you could tip it. But I mean, you know, maybe
that's like another bar.
Yeah, I like that one too. That might be a bit more attractive.
The
bar.
Hooter shooter.
That one's got
right next. Right that down. It's right next to the bearded hen.
That's right. Yeah. One group goes to one goes to the other. Yeah.
Yeah, one has my attention.
Yuck. Is there anything else on there? You kind of talked about it, like setting up your bow when you're setting up your peep or whatever, but it says when your sight housing drops,
into your arrow flight, like when you're shooting for a long distance. So like, let's say that you're setting up your hunting bow for tack. You're like, okay, you go out, you go to your club or you're at your house, you get to, you know, 70, 80 yards, and now you've got clearance issues.
So, I mean, that there's not a whole lot. I mean, crank up your poundage or lighten your arrow setup.
Well, the peep was the big thing, right?
Yeah, your peep.
I learned that the hard way, right? I had to figure that out the hard way. I'm like, what do I do here? I've got sight tape that goes to 120,
yep.
But I'm at 80, and now my fletching is crashing into my housing. Yeah. What do I do here? My bow tech's like, can we move your peep up a quarter of an inch?
Yeah,
we did that, and then now I'm like familiar with the fact that like if I'm setting a bow up to go do this, I know where that peep's got to be, exactly. So that I can, like you said, set it for 60, not 20.
Right. Mm-hmm.
That will resolve that issue the best of the abilities, right?
Yeah.
And then real quick, Jack, you can index your fletchings, make sure that...
Yeah, you definitely want to index your fletchings so they're not hitting your scope housing.
Right.
I had a cousin, a buddy of ours, who was trying to just see how far he could shoot, wasn't really paying attention to... So he cranks it down. He had one of those spot hog fathers. It's like an expensive, very like bulletproof sight. And so he shoots, and he's like, I hear a bam, the arrow explodes, and it spins the thing. Like, he totally actually shot with the front of his arrow, his own housing, right in front of his face. Like, yeah, ever since then, every time I'm, like, measuring, and I'm double measuring any time that you're kind of getting close.
Cause yeah, especially because he probably had, like, a fall-away rest, but
yep.
The cable-driven, so when he had it sitting in there,
yep, exactly.
It was down, and so as he drew back, it came up into the scope, but didn't know it.
I mean, I feel like that could have been bad. Like, that could explode your whole
bow. Oh, and your hand.
Yeah, I mean, and you send stuff to your hand, yeah.
Yeah.
That happened last year on the practice range at TAC. You remember we were standing there,
yeah.
And that guy was like, and he just walked away with his head down.
There's a lot of shame. There's a lot of shame in that moment. No, with all those guys in the practice line, it's kind of scary. It's like, hopefully no one's judging me if I shoot high, and you're kind of looking around to explode your bow. Like, that would be rough.
And so, like, what has your guys' experience been at TAC?
I was going to say, maybe to summarize, we'll go through and what's been our experience, likes and dislikes, and then I think what we'll do is we'll take another quick break, and then we'll proceed from there. But I definitely know I'm thinking about something as we're talking about this, but we'll start with you guys.
Generally, when we go to TAC, we're just using our hunting setups. Like, we're TAC set up so there's different courses for you to shoot at different ranges. So there may be 20 targets from 25 to 45, if that's what you're comfortable for, and obviously there's the longer range course if you're up for that, like the knock-on or like the Leopold that was longer.
Sitka had
one. Yeah. I usually shoot the Yeti one. It's that anywhere from 25, and I think the Yeti on the last shot, I think it's like 75.
Yeah,
so
that's fine.
Right.
It depends too. Like, you choose your course based on what your plan is for the year. So if it's like you're going west, you. Or like to Alaska, it's different than if it's like, oh, I got just deer hunting and
yeah,
right.
But cause I don't know enough to be messing with my bow. I don't have the stuff, don't have the desire to learn. I don't want to keep bringing it in and out, so I just set it, forget it, go with what works. And I mean, and it depends on my bow setup too. I found if I actually mount my sight closer to my bow,
yeah,
I can get a little bit more distance out.
I was going to say that too. I didn't mention that, but yeah, you can bring it in. I always, like, if you look at my bow, I shoot a Matthews, the V3X,
mm-hmm.
and I shoot an Excel.
Yep.
But if you look, my carbon rod is slid as far in as it will go, and it's cut off. Like, I don't extend it out at all because you're just, any little torque, and it's just magnified.
Intensify.
You know, you see, you know, like Cam Haynes, you look at his, and his is all, you know, and everyone's like, I want to be like Cam. Well, Cam's a freak of nature. Like,
yeah, shoots all the time .
So, but if you want to be accurate and more, you know, the most forgiving is what I want.
Same.
Because like Frank's like, I get fucking excited, you know. Well, so do I. Like, hopefully everybody gets excited when they're drawing on a deer. Well, I want to have the most forgiving setup possible because I want to try to kill. You owe that to the animal.
Yep.
You know, and it's kind of a fad. Like, people are... got their sight.
I did it. I've been there.
Right.
And same thing. So now you're changing your the gap in your pens as you're going.
Yeah.
And then, so yeah, you lose.
It shrinks it, right, with the closer.
Yeah, yeah. So you're going to have a little more clearance as you bring that in.
Yeah. So I don't know what I was, if that was the answer to the question.
Overall, good experience.
I like it.
Yeah, I guess just to summarize, my thought is after doing it for a couple of years, I really like going there, the social aspect of it, the vendors. One of the cooler things that Michigan, Northern Michigan offers throughout the year as a bow hunter. The first time I went there, there's all these people walking around with bows and backpacks and stuff. I'm like, these are my people. Like, this is really cool. But I learned that I wasn't set up to shoot it. And I decided that I wanted to do it again, so I actually got a bow and set it up to do such. But, you know, there's probably a lot of value in it if you are going to go west, that it will be some good practice. But as far as, like, actually making you a better Midwestern deer hunter, it does add value because normally that time of year you probably wouldn't be shooting your bow that much. So there's, like, a good thing that's almost like at the six-month mark, halfway through back to the hunting season, when now you're picking your bow up and you're shooting and you're just messing with things that you normally wouldn't be messing with. And for me, that came at a great level of value. But, you know, if you're just thinking, like, should I go do this event so that I'm a better deer hunter? Well, it's good that you're doing that, but it's also, you know, there's argument to be had. You could be out scouting or doing something different. And if you're taking your hunting rig apart to go shoot a competition and then you got to put it all back together, you might kind of be hurting yourself a little bit in that aspect. So exactly. I feel like this was a good conversation for people here today to decide if it's something they want to participate in. And yeah, you could go there with a bow that is only set up to only shoot 60 yards and just shoot the 60 yard targets. And if you want to get a little bit ballsy later in the afternoon, but it is so fun shooting those long distances and watching those arrows fly.
The flight
fly.
Of it, a long shot is beautiful.
Man.
It's even fun sitting on that chairlift and watching people shoot.
It really is fun to see all that. Yeah.
Look at that dude miss. I never get sick of that.
They do
the
allow
fly.
Them, though. You know, I mean, you can move up on the targets, too. You know?
Well, that's the thing, too.
Like, you know, you don't have to shoot
there's
it.
A, is there a women's tee?
Yeah, well, it's like a lot of, you know.
Asking for a friend.
Older guys, too, you know.
Yeah, that's true. I don't know.
But no, they you know, I mean, like I say, it's not, you know, you're not going to win the truck or whatever, you know. So, I mean, go out there and have fun, you know.
They call it a crossbow tee in this industry.
Yeah, that's right.
Sorry. Made more sense.
Yeah.
But yeah, just go out and have fun. And even if, like, I've talked with the guys from TAC, they don't want you to say this or whatever, but like, there's nobody monitoring the practice range. So, like, if you didn't get in or whatever, just go up there if it's not too far.
Yeah.
Make the drive. Check out the vendors. Check out the atmosphere. Shoot the practice range.
Come to our party.
Yeah. I mean.
Yeah, these guys throw a party every year. It's worth going to.
It's unsanctioned. But
I'm going to guess there's more of those stories that you've been telling that maybe aren't. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, they're not.
It's ready, a great time.
So, yeah.
Okay, let's take a quick break if we could. Let's reconvene here at 4:40, and then I'm going to ship you guys off and bring you guys up, and we'll talk a little bit about the deer camp project, and then we'll get some cold beers cracked, and we'll kind of get into that. So.
All right.